My guest this week is a native Celtic shaman, John Cantwell. So John will tell us all about what shamanism is all about and how he heals people in Celtic counseling. John, good morning, John. Are you there?
Good morning, Lakshmi.
How good morning.
Wonderful to speak to you on such a beautiful morning.
It is beautiful. Beautiful autumn day. So tell us about your healing practices.
Indeed, Lakshmi, myself and my wife Karen, for over 20 years now, have had a professional dedication to bringing shamanic recovery, healing, curing techniques to many people who bring the expected range of physical, emotional, psychological, psychosexual illnesses, many which are, you know, well known to us these days, everything from depression, relationship issues, cancers, loss of life purpose, a great range of holistic health challenges that we would expect. And we bring very ancient techniques for personal recovery, techniques that bring resources to people to help them, in a sense, self-heal and self-recover from whatever is challenging their life or ailing them. So in a sense, we bring a contemporary clinic practice here in Dublin, and we work with people worldwide as well using the internet. But we're using ancient techniques that are perhaps the oldest healing and spiritual techniques of humanity, but bringing them in a contemporary modern way that suits the way we think today, the way we live today. And as I said, we've been doing this for over 20 years. We are Irish, so we draw hugely from our own native Irish tradition, which is, as you say, Celtic, but it's also pre-Celtic. And myself and Karen as well are researchers and travelers. We do a lot of field work, so we have connections and projects and cooperation, education projects with many people around the world, indigenous shamanic practitioners in Australia, in North, Central, South America, over in the east towards Mongolia. So in a sense, you know, we're like any health professional, we're in constant development and in constant reciprocal information sharing with many people. So yeah, I suppose we are by definition health professionals, but I suppose we're bringing what might be regarded as outside the mainstream. But it is, I have to say, being invited into the mainstream more and more, and we're really seeing that hugely, particularly in the last 15 years.
Yes, this is very interesting, because the mainstream, most people, whenever I mention shamanic practices, they say, oh, it's a quasi religious group or so. It's kind of, I think that's because there's very little knowledge about what goes on.
And, you know, shamanism, it's a word that ends in an ism, so we tend to put it up there with all the other isms that are out there
yes.
in the world.
Yes.
You know, Buddhism and Catholicism and Islamism. And the truth is, Lakshmi, that the way of the shaman or shamanism, you know, isn't a religion at all.
Yes, it's not a religion. Yes, that we have to emphasize.
There is no dogma. There is no theology. There is no great book you have to learn. There are no laws that come from any kind of hierarchical structure. And it is the oldest path of self-spiritualizing. It's the oldest path of the human being finding his or her own spirituality. It's the oldest human path for the human being finding his or her own healing. And with a deep, deep connection with nature.
Yes.
And it is, in fact, the tradition that is underneath or gives rise to all healing codes and to all other spiritual traditions and all religions. So in a sense, it's very primal. It's about going to a very deep source and taking very much personal responsibility and accountability for your own spiritual path and your own holistic health. But it is a tradition that, you know, anthropology doesn't really know how old it is, but current
yes,
estimates
yes.
range between 50 to 100,000 years old.
And actually, in all cultures, there's this practice. It's something universal practices. And
oh,
some,
I don't think you
yeah.
have to look far, yeah, for
yes.
nature to be a very important part of how people find even inspirational stories. And when you look at the great stories of avatars of major world religions like Buddha, Muhammad, Christ. All of these stories of these great avatars, most of them happen in nature.
Yes, yes. I mean, nature was the first religion, I suppose, in, you know, spiritual, the idea of spirituality came from nature. Yeah. Perhaps people have forgotten about nature and forgotten about the old practices, natural healing.
Indeed, and a part of it is because, you know, with industrialized societies, with that comes very often a sophistication that says to be close to nature or to find the divine or to find the sacred in nature is really kind of second-rate practice. Really, the more sophisticated practice is something more intellectual, and that comes from a very scientific bias in society, and there's nothing wrong with science, but
yes,
what we are seeing quite clearly in industrialized societies with that kind of thinking is we're seeing the destruction of the environment. So many people are waking up that there is something not quite right about a highly intellectual, a scientific-only way of living that kind of puts nature only as something for us to use, something for us to use for our industry, that in the destruction of our own planet,
yes,
people are waking up. Do you know what? There is something our ancestors knew that we have to remember, because if we don't, we're actually going to destroy what our species needs for survival.
Yes. You were saying about, you know, the problem is that the mind and the body has been separated for so long, and then comes medication for people. So how would your practice help this ongoing onslaught on nature?
Well, partly we see, no matter what health issue anybody brings to us, whether it's predominantly a physical or a psycho-emotional or a psychosexual or psycho-spiritual ailment, what we find is once the human being is invited back into a deeper connection with nature, you will see positive health benefits. That's a given. Also, to tackle the separation of the mind and body, that the shamanic path is very holistic. It sees a very deep relationship and oneness between that part of us that's physical, that part of us that's mental, that part of us that's sexual, that part of us that's spiritual. So that it's a very holistic outlook on health. And we always have to talk about the difference between what's called healing medicine and curative medicine. Now, the medical model is very important, and boy, yes, we need it. But it's not the only way that we can recover. That sometimes, yes, we do need the painkiller to help the immediate severity of pain we're feeling in our body. But often the painkiller won't tackle what's causing the pain.
Yeah.
And sometimes we need a way of investigation and exploring what's hurting us that goes to the deepest root of what's causing it. And I suppose that's really the work of the healing shaman, where we look at the energies in a person's life or the energies in a person's environment that are conspiring together to bring about the level of suffering or pain in the person, so that we're not trying to put a plaster on the pain. You would need your painkiller for that, or you need to go and see your GP or see your surgeon for that. But the shaman does tackle the deepest level of causation of what's creating the suffering or the pain in the person. So I would say as well, just to finish that answer for you, Lakshmi, that the shaman will work with the human being regarding the person as a self-healing organism. That it really is a tradition that subscribes that we have immense resources within ourselves to self-cure, to self-heal, and that when we do, while it takes sometimes effort to really take responsibility for your own life, the empowerment is all yours, and the wisdom you gather along the way is all yours. So that it is a very empowering tradition, and it's one that I think is very important in our time, where many people are discovering that they have given their power away, either only to the medical model, or they've given their power away to people or organizations who said they had authority. People have given their trust over to these organizations, but these organizations have let them down.
So what you're saying is,
well,
it's
a way for people to recover that.
So what you're saying is you trust yourself first. You're beginning to trust yourself. When you say energies, is that part of it?
Indeed. And, you know, I have wonderful conversations with scientists who might have a very strong judgment about the kind of things that shamans do, but ultimately end up talking about the same thing, because we end up talking about energy. And energy, a basic law of science, something that shamans have always understood, a basic law of science is that energy cannot die. Energy can only change technically a vibration or change its oscillation. So there's a part of you and me, Lakshmi, there's a part of the life of every listener right now that's pure energy, and we can measure it. You know, if we put electrodes on the rib cage of anybody who's living and breathing, we can measure the electromagnetic energy in the body, and the average in a human being is 7.82 hertz. Now, if we put those electrodes into the earth and measure the background electromagnetic energy in the earth, guess what? The average we get will be 7.82 hertz, which really confirms on a scientific level that there's an absolute similarity in energy in the human being as there is with the earth. But that energy, even when I die, even after my last breath, even the scientist has to agree, my energy has to go somewhere. For some people, of course, they translate that as the spirit or the soul of the person. But even from a place of pure energy, Lakshmi, there is something of us in human beings that indeed never dies and always is. There is, by definition, an eternal part of us.
Yes.
And the shaman will work with that energy body. The shaman will work with that part of you that is eternal when you are presenting with any kind of health issue.
Is there techniques that you use to find this energy or what a person is like?
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. And many people, for example, will be familiar with hearing different words that describe the energy body that's connected to the physical body. And one of the outstanding ways of talking about that currently is using the word chakras. Now, the word chakra comes from the East, from a Vedic tradition in the direction of India and so forth. But the Irish tradition was to talk about the energy body as a system of doorways, a way of understanding that energy body as having a series of passages of openings where energy could come in and go out, like a pair of lungs.
Yes.
And that this can be, human beings can learn to see this energy body, human beings can learn to feel it, human beings can learn to assess it, to measure it with different instruments. It's a very, very simple folk knowledge. The ultra-scientific outlook would sometimes disregard it as not being real, but the evidence is that it's a tradition that still works. It's always worked. And for many people, that's the only evidence they need, that if their health improves as a consequence of working this way, if these are techniques the healing shaman uses and the person improves, then what more evidence do we need? So, yes, you can learn to see the energy body. We even have sophisticated cameras now that can photograph the energy body. But before all of that, human beings always had the potential to see the energy field, to feel it, to measure it, and to find as well ways of improving, enhancing the quality of energy in the energy body. And in a sense, that's about bringing about positive health.
In the common sense, I'm just thinking when you're talking about it, it's like a radio, you know, field, magnetic fields and whatever, radio waves, sort of. Could you say
indeed,
that?
Indeed, Lakshmi. I suppose the healing shaman will work from the same principle as the gardener, that when somebody presents with a health issue,
yes,
like we look at a garden for the first time, we look at, okay, what condition is it in? And do we need to extract anything from the garden, like weeds or large stones? Do we need to improve the soil in any way before we start planting what we really want to see growing in the garden? And that kind of attitude will be the same as the healing shaman. He or she will listen to the health issue being presented, but then look underneath the story of the symptoms and look at the pure energy that's active, giving rise to the health symptoms. And often what we see is some energies that have become embedded in the energy body need to be extracted, like taking a weed out of a garden.
Yes.
And in that sense, then, space is created for a more nourishing and healthy energy to be brought into the energy field, and nature is a tremendous resource for providing that replacement healthy energy. But the shaman also can have techniques to speed up how that can happen. And then what we witness is an improvement in the symptoms in the human being. And then also there's more advanced techniques where there's the understanding how the energy body or the soul body of the human being can fracture or become fragmented, or we can lose a part of our energy field as a consequence of trauma, fright, abuse, or violation, or accidents. And this is part of a survival technique where in order to recover from the great fright or the scale of the trauma, a part of our psyche, a part of our energy body fragments away. And it allows us to survive the aftermath of the trauma. And indeed, it's a very intelligent short-term survival mechanism. But in the medium to long term, there is health consequences where often people report not fully being themselves after the car accident or after the chemotherapy, not quite being able to feel how they used to be. And this is often the language people have for describing that they've lost a part of themselves, or a part of themselves has fragmented. And what the healing shaman does is bring back those parts of us that necessarily had to fragment for us to survive a major trauma or a major fright. And this, the technical term is soul retrieval. And it's interesting that in the Irish word for healing, which is lias, L-E-I-G-H-E-R-S, it's also the Irish word for retrieval. So that in our first language of this island, there's the understanding that retrieval, winning back the lost parts of ourselves, restores that wholeness, that restores health and well-being, and a real strong sense of ourselves. So soul retrieval would be an example of an advanced energetic healing medicine within the shamanic tradition.
When I'm listening to you, I mean, there are elements that are actually practiced even in conventional psychology or psychotherapy, and there's a great affinity between the two when I listen to you.
Oh, indeed.
Isn't
and,
it?
You know, I have great peers and indeed clients who are working as psychologists and psychiatrists and counselors, psychotherapists and so on, and I love seeing how, yeah, there is crossover and how there is mutuality in all of these fields. But then I'm always reminded, Lakshmi, that psychology, of course, comes from the Greek word psyche, which is the Greek word for soul. And that really is, of course, the primary interest of the healing shaman. But modern psychology has sometimes tended to have a bias on the cognitive or the intellectual or the thinking functions or the thinking
yes.
health of the person, which is very important, but it's not the full condition of the human being.
And yes.
As I said earlier, that the tradition of shamanism is ultimately at the bottom of all
yes.
spiritual, religious, and healing curative practices.
You have special techniques like, for instance, ancestral memory. Could you explain a bit about that?
Yes. Within the world of shamanic practice, connection to one's ancestors is very important. Again, sometimes in the industrialized world, we're often asked to regard ourselves and our own generation as the most progressive, and those who've gone before us were in some way primitive, and therefore looking backwards or looking underneath us to our ancestors is not given tremendous regard or respect. To the shaman, this is a great tragedy, because we can learn lots about our current well-being, our current health conditions, by looking in the direction of where we come from. That me speaking to you today, I'm standing upon the shoulders of two people, my mother and my father, but I'm also standing on the shoulders of other four people, my four grandparents, and beneath them, my eight great-great-grandparents, and so forth. So that, in a sense, every human being who's alive today on top of a Christmas tree of a phenomenal amount of ancestors, people whose lives, if they were not lived, we wouldn't have our life today. Now, when you make journeys into ancestral connection. It can really bring about a real sense of where you're really from, bring a real sense of connection to your own life, a sense of belonging, a sense of connection, but also crucially, it can help you look at things in your own life that you may be dissatisfied with or unhappy with, and in fact, their origin is from somewhere in your ancestry. So we have the capability through healing practices to heal what might be an ancestral history or an ancestral legacy. To heal that, we feel the benefit primarily in our lives today, but the shaman will also say the benefit trickles back down into the family tree, into the ancestry. And you and I have a phenomenal amount of ancestors beneath us today. It's said by science that for one human being to be alive in 2018, over 1 billion two-leggeds needed to have lived from Homo sapien into Homo erectus, Homo habilis. 1 billion people.
Even it's in the DNA.
Yes, of course it has a great visibility on a physical level through our DNA. And it's become quite fashionable to have your DNA tested these days. Indeed, for my 50th birthday, I treated myself to having my DNA tested. And I think everybody, I think, should have this done for free by every government in the world, because it, no matter what your ethnicity, no matter what your nationality, it will just show you that you are a citizen of the world, because it will show you the spread of your DNA right around the globe. And ancestral connection, ancestral healing can certainly assist with you beginning to change your DNA if your DNA is causing health problems, because we do know that DNA is constantly in transformation. And that it's understood that you can take part in the healthy transformation of your own DNA, particularly letting go those aspects of your DNA that are inspiring health problems or health issues.
I wonder now, at this, in contemporary society, because of war and all kinds of problems, people are, there are many migrants, they have to get away, they have to run away from their ancestry, from their original countries, and they travel to different...
You know, I would say there's many people listening who, when they hear about ancestors, won't find that conversation very inviting, that many families have histories of arguments, have histories of alienation, silence, fights, and so on. Many people have stories of shame in their family backgrounds, as you say. Many people having to let go a sense of connection to their ancestry in order to survive.
Yes.
In order to climb out of poverty, in order to, you know, look for safe places to live. And, you know, sometimes for a person to migrate,
yes,
which we see hugely around the world and is a major part of our history here in Ireland, sometimes part of coping with the challenge of migration is to forget, is to let go where you come from in order to start all over again. And while that's very understandable, it does come at a cost, because if we refuse to heal what's in our ancestry, then there's a great likelihood that unconsciously we'll carry on that dysfunction, or we carry on that health problem in our own generation. And if we don't tackle it in our generation, we may well then pass it on to the next generation.
Yes, it's a baggage you carry, you mean?
Yes, and yes, all the evidence is that we do see many health issues that are ancestral, that what we see in me today may well also have been visible in my father and mother,
yes,
and my grandparents. But we can take the opportunity in our lifetime, as I was saying, to tackle something that's prevalent in our health today or in our communities today, and identify if it's ancestral and to do something proactive and positive about that.
Unfortunately, it's time is now upon us. It's coming up to 3 minutes now to 11. We could talk about this for forever, John. It's a fascinating subject, but as I said,
thank
unfortunately, we've got to go.
Okay.
But it's a pleasure.
Let me thank John. John, thank you very much.